Then let's cultivate our motivation. And on this very beautiful day, see that while the weather may be beautiful, and we may be happy, there are many other living beings who are experiencing various difficulties, and we too have all sorts of difficulties. And so while we can enjoy the beautiful weather, let's also have a broader vision, one that takes into account the welfare of all living beings, not simply our own immediate happiness, but a very expansive mind that cares about others. And so let's listen and share together today, so that we can increase that expansive mind and generate love, the wish for beings to be happy, and compassion, the wish for them to be free of misery, and to also eliminate impediments to doing so, different mental afflictions that get in the way of becoming the kind of person we want to be. So with this kind of intention, then let's share the Buddha's teachings today and help each other along the path. So we've been reading this book. Some of you may be in the UU group that's kind of gone through and really, from what I've heard, digested the material in this book and applied it very well to your lives. So this will be some more review. These kind of teachings we need to hear over and over again. One time is not enough. And every time we hear something, then it goes in at a deeper level. It means something different to us. So I've been reading like one chapter every sharing the Dharma day. And today we're on a chapter, still towards the beginning, called Compassion, Interdependence, and Universal Responsibility. Okay. And so this book was written... Russell Coates, who's at Eastern University, and I wrote it together. It's not a Buddhist book. It's meant for a very diverse audience, but a lot of it is based on Buddhist ideas and Buddhist principles. Yeah, but there's no religion in it, so to speak. Okay, so the chapter starts out with a quotation from Martin Luther King. So I'll read a little bit and then comment on what I read, and then we can have some Q&A at the end. So King begins, "We must all learn to live together as brothers," and I would say, or sisters, "or we will perish together as fools." How true, isn't it? His Holiness Dalai Lama talks about us, about evolution as not being survival of the fittest, but survival of the most cooperative. You know, because if we cooperate with each other, all of us can survive. If we don't cooperate with each other and just continue bickering and fighting, then, as King says, we will perish together as fools. So this is the great challenge of the hour. This is true of individuals. It is true of nations. No individual can live alone. No nation can live alone. Yeah? So this is really true. I mean, we see on an individual level that we're so dependent on others for even our food, our clothing, our education, of course, shelter, everything we know, every talent we have, every object we use comes from the energies of other living beings. We, you know, as one individual, cannot make anything ourselves, really. Can we? Yeah. I mean, even growing your own food, can you grow your own food yourself without any help for living beings, from others? And you might say, well, yes, I can. But where do your shovels come from? And where does the fertilizer come from? Yeah, where do the seeds come from? Yeah, where does the material for the bed in your garden come from? You know? So even if you plant your own garden, everything you use in it came from others. So we live completely dependent, interdependent with other living beings. There's no other way to be. Yeah. And especially as nations now, as King mentioned, it's exactly the same. Yeah. We may say, oh, globalization is bad, but we have globalization, small globalization within the country, don't we? I mean, we're 50 individual states. How come the country is able to prosper? Because the 50 states cooperate with each other. If the 50 states were all individual countries with their own borders, their own rules, their, you know, own tariffs, their own presidents, I mean, we would be stuck in so much bureaucracy. I mean, I say this with all, with my own wish that sometimes there's a few states I wouldn't mind if they seceded. I won't mention which ones. Or sometimes I think California, Oregon, and Washington should secede. You know? Wow, we would elect a really different president. But what I'm getting at is, you know, we're able to do so well because we cooperate instead of everybody just thinking about themselves. And it's the same thing on the global area, you know, a global arena. We can't just think about our own country now. We're intricately involved with others, you know, economically, politically, environmentally. Yeah. And, you know, so we have to cooperate. And so just thinking, you know, my thing and not yours, and I'm taking care of me and forget you, you know, then we're going to wind up living in a world where we're closing doors on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because if we push others away, it's not like they're going to be friendly towards us in response. Yeah. As individuals or as groups within a country or as different nations. Yeah. And you know, we can see the importance of cooperation, and especially nowadays with what's going on with North Korea and Washington, you know, the disadvantages of just, you know, throwing accusations at each other. The folly of it, actually. Yeah. Where's it going to get anybody? Yeah, that's one conflict. I'm not quite sure what they're fighting over. It's, you know, I mean, other kind of wars, you can see what people are fighting over. This one, I just see, like, excuse me, but, like, you know, when you have kindergarten and you have two kids who are both bullies in a sandbox, and they're throwing sand at each other, yeah? I don't quite understand what this conflict is about. In any case, you know, Certainly, threats are not going to eliminate it. Yeah. And war is way too dangerous now. Okay, so let's hear what the chapter says. As Martin Luther King Jr. pointed out, none of us can live alone. We are all dependent on each other. What do we need to learn in order to live together as brothers and sisters? The answer is compassion. Feeling compassion means being concerned about the sufferings of others and wishing them to be free of that suffering and its causes. Compassion is closely related to love, which is the wish for living beings to have happiness and its causes. Having compassion makes sense. If we don't care for others, all of us will suffer, either because our needs are not being met or because we will be surrounded by unhappy people, a situation that will make our own lives miserable. Okay, so if we isolate ourselves, we don't have compassion for others, okay, we'll suffer, first of all, because our needs won't be met, because, as we were just saying, you know, everything we have and use comes from others. Yeah, I mean, could you imagine, if all of a sudden all imports to this country ceased? Yeah, what would be in our stores? Because even things that are made in America have parts that are made in other countries. Yeah, I was reading about the auto industry, and they take parts back and forth between the U.S. and Mexico, you know, until finally, you know, each country contributing a little bit as you build a part up until the parts are assembled to make a car, you know. So if you just isolate yourself, then, you know, what are we going to have to live on, you know? Or if Washington State, we just said, you know, forget everybody else, we don't care about what happens to you, you know, then what are we going to be able to do? As one state, can we produce everything that the inhabitants of this state need? Yeah, in the winter, forget fruits. Yeah, we'll have apples galore, but that's about it. Yeah. Okay, and certainly, you know, on a global level, it's the same thing. And as individuals as well. Yeah, we depend on other people. So that's one disadvantage if we lack compassion. The second is that we'll be surrounded by unhappy people, because if we don't care about the people that we're living with who are surrounding us, yeah, and just look out for ourselves, they're going to be unhappy. And who wants to live amongst a lot of unhappy people? Because unhappy people will let us know they're unhappy. Yeah, I mean, you can see in a family, yeah, if somebody's unhappy, it affects the whole family. In a society, if one group is oppressed, yeah, everybody's going to know about it because they're unhappy. Yeah, and then that affects the happiness and the well-being of everybody concerned. So I find it so interesting now that people are, you know, with the gated communities, and even forget communities, gated houses, yeah, and as if you can wall out the rest of the world so you don't have to deal with other people's suffering. Yeah, how you can't stay inside your own gated community or inside your own gated house forever. You have to go out just to get the supplies you need. And, you know, that's going to influence you, seeing everybody around you. For these reasons, yeah, His Holiness the Dalai Lama counsels If you want to be selfish, be wisely selfish and take care of others. So if we take care of others, you know, in our homes, in our workplaces, in our society, then they will be happy, they will cooperate with us, we will live amongst happy people, everything goes much better for everyone. Not so much conflict. Yeah? So compassion applies to all areas of our lives. On a personal level, compassion for ourselves, for friends and family, for our colleagues and our boss, even for the people who sometimes disturb us. On a community level, compassion of one group for other groups. On an international level, compassion of one nation for the citizens of other nations. Okay? So, when I wrote this, I made sure to put in, you know, compassion for your boss. Because I teach in many different places, and in Singapore, so many people complain about their boss. You know, their boss did this, and they're unhappy with their boss about that. So now I start teasing the people, you know, about, well, not so much teasing, but, you know, emphasizing. You can't just have compassion for your colleagues. You have to have compassion for your boss. Because your boss is working with people like you who all they do is complain. Yeah. So, you know, bosses need compassion too. Compassion is the opposite of and the antidote to our usual self-centeredness that urges us to get the best and most for ourselves in order to ensure our own happiness. Self-centeredness results in difficulties for those around us, and their problems disturb not only their tranquility, but our own as well. So if you look at what's happening with Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma, and now Jose, they seem to be coming one right after the other, look how much people depend on each other in those situations. In Harvey, you had, you know, all different sorts of people who do not run in the same social circles, all of a sudden helping each other, rescuing each other, you know, pulling each other off roofs or out of houses or doing who knows what. Yeah. And it's remarkable. And what makes me sad is that afterward, they'll all go back, retreat to their own social circles and forget about the other people who either they helped or who helped them, you know? So learning to reach across these kind of boundaries and really get to know others and see how dependent we are. We have several people in Florida, and Venerable Sumpton's been writing to them and checking how they are, and, you know, as they're preparing. And one young man, He evacuated from the West Coast to the East Coast. I'm not sure how much evacuation that is. But, apparently he was in Fort Myers, and then he went to the East Coast of Florida. But, you know, how could he evacuate that far without, you know, having other people to depend on where he could go? Some other friends in Central Florida, they're... It's amazing. These people are staying there. They all got the evacuation warning, and they're staying. I don't know what the story is. But, you know, they wrote us, you know, we have water, we have food, we're all stocked up, and we're just going to sit it out. And, you know, so the supplies all came from other people. And if they face damages afterwards, that's going to come from other people helping them. And the people who did evacuate it, my goodness, how many people are really reaching out to help them. We have one friend who stayed behind in the Georgia-South Carolina border to help the Red Cross. So, you know, in face of everything that happens in our life, we really need others. And they need us, too, because we have skills to offer, and we can give things to them. So this give and take brings a lot of joy and sense of fulfillment to our lives, whereas just looking out for our own benefit often leaves us feeling high and dry, so to speak. Yeah. Okay, many years ago, some of the people in the city where I lived, this was when I was living in Seattle, did not want to pay increased property taxes in order to support schools and after-school activities for children and teens. They figured that since their children were already grown, there was no reason for them to pay for the education of other people's kids. However, they were willing for their taxes to be used to build more prisons to protect them from criminals. Okay, what they didn't see was that these things were related. Yeah, and so now there's something they've actually called it the school to prison pipeline. That, you know, when kids go to school, they don't get a good education, they don't have after-school activities. You know, schools are always in the thing of budget cut, 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 cut. You know, schools, so kids, you know, don't have a good education or the resources, their counseling or whatever they need. Then who is going to break into the houses of these people who voted against the tax increase? You know, who are the people who have nice houses? Yeah, the people probably whose kids are grown or whatever, they vote against the tax increase. But these kids who aren't getting a good education, who get into drugs, who get into mischief, whose houses are they going to break into? Yeah. So you see that, you know, if you just look out for yourself and say, well, you know, why should I pay for the education of some other kids? Yeah, the other people's kids. You know, you're setting it up for higher crime in your own neighborhood. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the government has to build more prisons, or it has to contract prison, you know, do the whole prison industry now, which is the government is contracting with outside companies to build prisons and manage them. It's a total disaster because for-profit prisons, what do they want to do? Keep the costs as low as they can. So cut all the programs that would help people, yeah? And they want to keep people incarcerated longer. So they get more profit from the taxpayers, from the government who's paying, you know, these private companies to house the inmates. But people are willing to pay for that. Taxpayers are willing to pay for the prisons, but not for the schools. Whereas if you have better education for kids, you aren't going to need the prisons. Yeah. When children don't receive a good education and after-school activities such as sports and arts are cut, they can easily get involved with drugs. Using drugs requires money, so some turn to theft. The stores that they shoplift from and the houses that they burglar often belong to the people who voted against the increased property tax. When children do not have the facilities and education that they need and are not cared for by their families, schools, and society in general, everyone is affected. We are all interconnected. Yeah, so similarly with the whole healthcare debate, yeah, if people are just looking to cut their own premiums and this whole thing about, you know, men don't want to pay for women to have medical coverage for maternity. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, you want the women to pay more to have to bear the children that you have, that you help conceive. Yeah. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. And, you know, if you cut healthcare for, you know, if you make healthcare so expensive that many people can't afford it, you know, because some of the programs in Congress, they would have really affected retirees and also the poor, then actually the taxpayers still wind up paying for it, because instead of getting good preventative care, as they would if they had insurance, they wind up going to ER, you know, only when they're desperate, and the government winds up paying for the ER bills. Yeah, either that or you turn people away from ER, which is, you know, really inhumane. And how can we call ourselves a civilized society if we do that? Yeah. So, this whole thing of cooperation due to compassion pays off for everybody. You know, I lived in India for many years. There's no health insurance in India that I know of, or maybe there is for a few people now, but, you know, so many people, you know, I mean, they just get sick and they die, and that's it. Yeah, and they die from the flu, they die from diarrhea, they die from all sorts of things that can be treated and cured. Yeah, and in India, they die in public. Less so now, but especially when I went there in the 70s, but also today. In the train stations, you see poor people, you see sick people, you see dead bodies. Yeah, on the side of roads. You know, when you drive around, poverty is there. And if people are not taken care of, you know, their health is right there in the middle of the street, and everybody deals with it. Yeah. So, you know, you can really see that if we don't care about others, it impinges on our own happiness. Yeah. So to care about others, we do so not just out of a selfish reason, but really be out of compassion for them. But to really see that we and others are related. Yeah, we are not isolated individuals that just do our own thing. Okay. Although we may win arguments when we care only for ourselves or for those who are on our side, when we humiliate people and ignore their misery, it will almost always come back to haunt us. Some people, they have to be victorious in any discussion or argument. Yeah, they cannot lose. Yeah. And some of us may be like that. Yeah. We push and push and push, and we're going to win the discussion, even if we know in the back of our mind that, let's say, our idea isn't the best one, we're still going to push for it because it's our idea. Yeah. And we really back ourselves into corners doing that, and become quite unpleasant to live with if we have to be the one who is victorious in every discussion. And then we humiliate people, ignore their misery, yeah, and it comes back to haunt us. Conflicts and wars throughout world history attest to this fact. Therefore, if we want to be happy ourselves, it is essential to care for the welfare of others. I mean, you look at the situation between Israel and the Palestinians. Everybody would be so much happier if they could cooperate with each other. Yeah? Wouldn't they? The economy in you know, the Gaza would increase and the West Bank would increase. Everybody would be so much happier. But everybody gets into this thing of, you know, well, I'm this and you're that and I can't trust you. And then it becomes very difficult to create trust amongst different kinds of people. Yeah, because they all hold a very reified idea of the other group. And this turns out poorly for everybody. Rather than categorizing some people as enemies whose needs are not important, we can instead care for their well-being. When we respect them as human beings and help them to meet their basic needs, such as their need for food, clothing, shelter, and medicine, and their need to be respected, to give and receive care and affection, and to contribute to the welfare of a group. There will be no reason for them to be antagonistic towards us. We will have done everything that we could do to ensure their happiness and end their suffering. Yeah. I'm right now reading a book by a journalist. The name is Suad McKennett. It's called "I Was Told to Come Alone," and she reports for the New York Times and the Washington Post, and she writes a lot about terrorism, what's going on in the Middle East, and so on. And after 9/11, she, was talking to different people and interviewing people. And one American said to her, "I don't understand why they hate us so much." Yeah. And it was like, so many people in this country were really surprised. You know, why did they, do this? Why do they hate us so much? And it was like we were totally oblivious to international affairs and international relations and other cultures. Yeah. And of course, there were policies done that were really detrimental to many people, and they let us know it. Yeah. And what's sad is right after 9/11, the U.S. had the sympathy of the entire world. But the way we responded to it, after a few years, everybody was saying, "What kind of country is this?" Because I teach internationally, and in Mexico and Europe in different places. And so I was hearing what different people were saying. And right after, people were so sympathetic. And then, after we started bombing and invading different countries, then all the sympathy vanished. It just totally evaporated. And we actually, due to our foreign policies, became quite good at helping the jihadis recruit. We did exactly what helped them to radicalize other people, either in the Middle East or even in the Western countries. Yeah, so this all happens due to a lack of compassion, a lack of understanding. Yeah, a lack of seeing that, we're all interrelated in the world, and that our culture is only one culture amongst many, and that other people have different ways of thinking, they have different values, different priorities that need to be heard and respected. Although everybody has the needs here, as we say, for food, clothing, shelter, and medicine. Their need to be respected. This is one of the biggest things, I think, that from reading this book that I'm really understanding is that many of the Muslims felt that the West just did not respect them. And all this talk of a war of civilizations just increased that feeling of, it's the Western countries against Islam, bunching everybody together in a really quite unfair way. Everybody has a need to give and receive care and affection. Yeah, when we incarcerate people to punish them, and cut off their ability to contact their family, which is, happening in a lot of prisons because It's incredible what they do. You know, our phone rates are pretty cheap, us people on the outside. You can get a month-long plan, call anybody, and it's very cheap. In prison, yeah, they will charge sometimes over $1 a minute for a phone call. Yeah. Now, can you imagine with your use of phone or even just to keep in contact with the people you care about, paying $1 a minute, how much that would rack up to be? And yet, the people who we incarcerate are predominantly low-income people. How do they pay for this? When people who are incarcerated, when they have contact with their family, when they feel love and affection, when they feel like they're a member that, you know, that can contribute to the group of their family or their friends, then when they're released, you know, there's something for them to go back to, and psychologically they're more well balanced. When they're cut off from friends and family, and the whole prison system is regarded as, you know, punish, 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 then when they're in prison, basically they don't learn any new vocational skills because the programs have been cut. When they get out, they don't have skills to get a job. They don't have contacts with other people. And, you know, in many ways, the system is just set up for recidivism. I work in the prison system. You know, I correspond with many inmates and give dharma talks in prisons. And, you know, so I've really come to understand this. It's quite surprising. Well, no, it's not that surprising. It's just we don't know about it. Yeah, we don't know about it. It's not what's put in the newspaper. Yeah. I think people probably know more about the upcoming iPhone 8 than they do about the situation of inmates in prison. Okay. But when we don't help to meet these basic human needs of people, it turns out badly for all of us, actually. Okay? But if we, can do everything that we can to ensure the happiness of others, not only material happiness, but like I was saying here, the ability to give and receive on a human level, you know, to. Because one of the things I find when I go into prisons that people really react to is I treat them just like I treat everybody else. And, you know, for us to be treated just like everybody else, you know, it's no big deal for us. We expect it. It's like this. When you go in a prison and you just say hello and how are you and, you know, what's happening? You just treat people as, you know, as a human being with respect. It's amazing the kind of responses you get. I mean, people just relax, they open up, they're so much happier. It's really surprising, you know. And, you know, the same, I think, for the street people that we see, to be able to treat them with respect, something that very often doesn't happen to them, it can be a very strong experience. One person told me he was in the Bay Area, and there was one woman, you know, panhandling, and he gave her $1, and he gave it with both hands. And said, you know, I would give you more, but I don't have a lot with me now. You know, so he spoke to her, he looked at her, you know, gave the gift, bent down and, you know, gave it respectfully. And when she looked up, she had tears in her eyes. And she said something to the effect of, you know, just the respect that you gave me means much more to me than the money. Yeah. So, you know, to really see that how important this is for people's growth. We need it and other people need it. If we give it to others, it comes back to us. If we sit around and say, I'm not going to respect them until they respect me, I'm not going to have compassion for them until they have compassion for me, yeah, then we're going to be in our a contest for who can sink to the bottom of the barrel faster. Yeah. But when we really reach out, and just small things can be quite important in doing this. Okay. So an enemy, if we act like this, an enemy will become a friend. History shows many instances of this, some even in our own lifetime. For example, Britain and the U.S. saw Germany and Japan as enemies in the 1940s. And now these countries are allies and work well together. Yeah? So all your relationships can turn around if you put some energy into it. Yeah? Human beings are more dependent on each other now than at any other time in human existence. Unlike centuries ago, very few people grow their own food now, or make their own clothes, or construct their own homes. Many of us do not know how to do these activities, and we depend on others who do, as well as on those who make the roads we drive on, who invent the technology we use, and who teach us everything we know, to name a few. Yeah. Once we recognize that we are inextricably interconnected, we will see that caring for each other is more crucial than ever before. At a gathering with inter-city children who live in violent communities and are at risk for turning into violence themselves. Okay, this was in Los Angeles some years ago. Were you there? No? Okay, Susan was there. I heard about it. Anyway, the Dalai Lama was meeting with some of these teens, and he said to them, violence is old-fashioned. War is old-fashioned. We have exceptional human brains, something no other species has. So we have to use our intelligence to help each other. Then all of us will benefit and live together peacefully. Yeah. So compassion is the way to do this. Now, can you imagine saying that to a bunch of kids, at-risk kids? No, it was in... I thought it was in L.A. I don't know. Anyway, he said the same thing many times in other places too, but I'm remembering it from this one particular thing because there he was specifically meeting with inter-city kids, you know, which is so important. Okay, then so that's the end. The chapters are short. That's the end of the chapter. There's a little reflection that says, consider a situation in the world or in your own life that might be improved by compassion. Imagine how this situation could be different if the people involved in it felt, thought, and acted with compassion, wishing others not to suffer. Can you think of some situations, either in your life or in the world, where that might help? Yeah. We might say, well, you know, the world's so big, how can I as one individual influence things? Yeah. Well, we look around and we can see there's a lot of situations where an individual can influence things adversely. Why can't one individual influence things in a beneficial way? And even if we can't change the whole world, how about working just within our own circles, you know, the people that we come in contact day to day? How can we show just even more basic respect and courtesy to people? Yeah. Because respect often, really, it matters much more to people than their physical needs, very often. Yeah. And you see people just, wars fought, and on individual level, people explode when when they're not treated with respect. Yeah. It's amazing how it's something that's so important, but we often neglect. Yeah. So, questions, comments?
I've read the Quran, and of course the Muslims consider that to be a holy word of God. And there are verses in there concerning jihadism. And there are verses that command Muslims to kill non-believers on sight. There are verses in there that if Muslims do not go into jihad, they will be punished. And of course, if a Muslim dies in the name of jihad, they go straight to heaven and they're given great rewards. So here is one of the major religions on earth, and its holy books, its religious books, actually commands its members to commit violence in order to extend Islam, and that's right in their religious book.
Okay. Well, I'm not an expert on the Quran, but I think we would have to look at and really study it, not just read what different people say the Quran says, but actually read it ourselves and see. And then also see if how things are being interpreted. Because jihad, you know, actually, as I've understood it from what I've read, refers to working on yourself internally. Because the real enemy is self-centeredness, stinginess, and so on. So the real jihad is working against our, you know, these tendencies within ourselves. You know, you could see that if it were interpreted always as an external things, that everybody would be at war constantly. And that's certainly not happening. Because Islam also, you know, encourages incredible generosity. I was very struck. There's one passage in the Quran that says, You're not allowed, you know, you should not have material things that other people in your community cannot afford. And I thought, wow, you know, could you imagine living in a community where nobody had riches that were beyond other people in the community? You know, in other words, you lived in a community where everybody was at the same economic level. And, you know, the Quran also encourages charity to the poor, to the sick, to other religions. And so if people really, you know, did that, it would be quite amazing. Yeah. I don't see any benefit in looking, picking out a few verses that from another holy book when we haven't studied the whole religion and we don't know all of its tenets, and we don't pick out the verses and the chapters that encourage other human behavior. Because if you look at the Bible, very similar things could be said about the Bible. Yeah? The Bible is incredibly violent. You know? A lot about punishment and, yeah, slighting your enemies, hellfire and brimstone. There's a lot in there. If you look historically what the Crusades did, in the, you know, the Crusades killed so many people, you know, and created so much destruction, all in the name of religion. So, having studied history at college, my conclusion was, you know, it's like every generation, people fight each other in the name of God. And what that indicates to me is that none of them have really understood the purpose and the tenets of their own faith. Because if you look at all the major religions, they all teach love and compassion and forgiveness and charity and ethical conduct. You know, these are universal values shared by all the religions. The problem is that people do not follow their own religions very well. So, you know, throughout history, we have people killing in the name of Jesus, we have people killing in the name of Moses, in the name of Allah. You know, this is all due to human beings' own internal confusion, the lack of compassion within our own hearts. Yeah. So we have to really try to understand, whatever religion you are, to understand the basic tenets of that religion and live it in our own lives. Yeah. Yeah. And also not to interpret everything that is written in holy books literally. Yeah. It doesn't seem to work out well. Because you can point to passages in just about every religion that can be understood to as a way to attack and abuse other people, and that's certainly not the intention of the founder of any religion.
Thank you for beautifully explaining that, Venerable. I myself had many friends from the Middle East, both Muslim and Jewish, in order to understand that region more. And yes, indeed, in the Quran, there's also a verse which says that forgiveness is better than fighting. It's better to forgive than to fight. And it also says there's no compulsion in religion, meaning nobody can be forced to follow a certain belief. And the Sufis, whom are mystics of the Muslims, they clarified the true meaning of jihad, which is the internal struggle against one's lower self, their ego, their attachments. And in modern times, due to the political instability in the Middle East, it has become very confusing because new movements have arisen which go against the classical understanding of this internal struggle. Mm-hmm. And due to the political situation, a lot of youth, just like here in the United States, you have many gangs, and the youth may join it because they feel alienated. The same thing is going on in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Many youth feeling alienated. And I've had many friends from the Middle East, both from the Arab countries and from Israel, Muslim and Jewish. And I studied both Judaism and Islamic teachings. I learned Arabic and also some Hebrew. And what I learned from these people in the Middle East, I saw many of them are very open-minded. I'm practicing Buddhism, and they actually supported me as friends to follow that path. Whereas here in the United States, from a lot of churches that claim to be Christian, I experienced a lot of suppression in that sense. So I saw like a lot of the Middle East people do have open-mindedness. And I believe, since that's a big issue right now, I believe people from the U.S. and the Middle East need to understand each other more.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these views, thinking the other is so bad, so evil, this will lead to more violence, saying mm-hmm. we should destroy them. We look at other cultures and see the problems they have, which may be true. But we also have many problems in our culture, in our society, that we have to fix, and within our own selves first. And then we can also do that for others as they fix themselves too. So thank you very much for clarifying that. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. So, yeah, so let's stay on the topic here. This is not going to become a big political discussion now. This is not the context for it. Okay. So we want to stay on the topic of how we can generate more compassion towards others, because that's our responsibility. Yeah.
So I find myself in a lot of situations where I'm trying to think of the best way to word this. I feel like there's a really It's really important to have compassion towards yourself as well, you know, mm-hmm. because you can't be compassionate towards others without being compassionate towards yourself. And as I kind of like go through, you know, my journey of life and stuff, I do run into people who really lack that ability to be compassionate. And I guess my question is how to kind of like, I don't know, any guidance you have for like where to draw that line of like being compassionate towards others and compassionate towards yourself. Like, I guess knowing your own limits, because there are times mm-hmm. where there's only so much you can do mm-hmm. when, you know, and if you keep putting yourself in this position to be compassionate, of course you can always be compassionate, but if you keep putting yourself into this position where, now you're starting to not be compassionate towards yourself. You know what I mean? Kind of being in those toxic environments or a toxic situation. And I feel like that's lacking compassion towards yourself. So maybe any guidance to kind of like bridge that gap. Or
okay. So first of all, sometimes we think compassion to self and compassion to others are unrelated. Actually, they're very much related. Yeah, because it's a basic attitude towards life. Yeah, it's not that, oh, we're compassionate towards others, but we hold ourselves to an impossibly high standard that we can't fulfill. And then when we don't fulfill it, we blame ourselves and feel guilty and push ourselves to do more and so on and so forth. That's not very realistic. Yeah. So this attitude of compassion, wanting to alleviate suffering, applies to ourself and applies to others. Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we have to find some kind of balance. Yeah. And so we do what we can. And when something, you know, is beyond what we're able to do, we say, I'm very sorry, I can't help with that. But in our hearts, we can still wish the other people well. Yeah. So when we say no, we don't have to hate the other people for asking. We just say, you know, we wish you well. I just am, you know, up against my own personal limits. So compassion also, it's an internal attitude, yeah? And it doesn't mean we have to reach out and help everybody else in an active way, because clearly we have to set priorities. We also have our own individual talents and abilities to help. And so telling ourselves we have to help in this way when helping this way might be better because that's where our talents lie, you know. So that is something to be take into consideration. And also, you know, there's a whole lot of misunderstanding about compassion. Sometimes we really think, you know, I have to do, if I'm going to be compassionate, I have to do everything everybody asks me. I have to be a people pleaser. And so if people are not happy, it's my fault. Okay? That is not compassion. That is people pleasing, and it's basically self-centeredness. I'm responsible for everybody else's happiness. Yeah, I'm so important, I can make everybody else unhappy if I don't do what they want. It's really not very respectful of other people and their own ability to manage their own emotions and deal with their own situations when we feel we have to go around fixing everybody and interceding in their life because we're the one and only thing that can make them happy or whatever. Okay, that's a little bit too much. So, you know, compassion is very different than being a people pleaser. Yeah, because people pleasing is very often, it's done out of fear, it's done out of attachment to reputation. That's not compassion. Because fear and attachment to reputation are all concerned with me, whereas compassion is concerned with the welfare of somebody else. Okay? And so often when we get into people pleasing, then we feel unfulfilled because somebody isn't thanking us in the way we think they should. They're not being appreciative to us. Whereas when we can really act with compassion, then the pleasure, the delight comes in doing what we're doing, not in somebody telling us afterwards how kind we are, how wonderful we are, blah, blah. It comes just from reaching out and doing what we're doing and seeing, wow, you know, I'm able to impact others in a positive way. That feels really good to me. Yeah? Okay, so this whole thing of, you know, beating ourselves up and I've got to do more and I've got to be better and, you know, I'm not compassionate enough and, you know, it's just, it doesn't work. At the beginning of my Dharma practice, I fell into a certain trap because my teacher is, you know, one of my teachers is quite highly realized and he doesn't need to sleep, you know. He just kind of sits in meditation and then, you know, maybe falls asleep an hour or two, you know, but always continually doing, interacting with people, you know, even if he's doing his own practices, you know, inviting other people to do them with him and so on. And so I would look at his example as a baby beginner and you know, and I'd get tired and then I'd say to myself, if I only had more compassion, I would do this and this and this, just like my teacher, you know? Push, push, push. You're not good enough. You've got to do more, you know? And then beat myself up. You're so uncompassionate. If you really had more compassion, you know, you would stay up late and do this. You would stretch yourself to do that. Push, push, push. And then at some point I realized, you know, that's not compassion. That's craziness. Yeah. And that I there's no need for me to compare myself to my teacher. I can emulate him and say, aspire to be like that, but I've got to work with my who I am right now. And I can't go with 2 or 3 hours or 4 hours of sleep, you know? And you know, so things like that, just being more realistic and not beating ourselves up for just, you know, having the limitations of ordinary human beings. And at the same time, we don't just indulge our limitations and say, oh, well, I'm limited, so okay, forget it, I'm never going to do this. You know, we need to cultivate our abilities more and more. Yeah, and not just like be self-indulgent. But also when we reach our ability to physically, you know, engage, at least emotionally, to make prayers for those people, to wish them well, to stay engaged at the heart level instead of like, you know, all this suffering is too much, I'm going to stick my head in the sand. Yeah. So in Buddhism, there's a practice called the taking and giving practice, which is really effective for staying involved at an internal level, even if we're unable to affect the external situation of somebody who is in misery. Okay. Did you? Yeah.
In the prison, when you have inmates that throughout the day experience several people who basically are taught to disrespect them. They're disrespected constantly all day long.
Yep.
And then, you know, someone like you comes along and shows some compassion. What do you tell them as far as how to interact with all these people, like the officers that are that they feel disrespected to?
Yeah,
they can maybe only make the matters worse, or they can make it better. So,
yeah,
how do you allow them to see that the cause of their own suffering?
Yeah, I encourage them, you know, to respect the prison officers and the staff in the prison, and remind them that usually people don't say, I want to grow up to be a prison guard. It's a difficult profession. And there's some of the inmates, if you look on my website, there's a whole section of writings by the inmates. And some of them tell stories of actual situations when they're in conflict with a guard and what to do. Because they know the guard's going to win. Yeah, they know that. So one guy I write to, he's in North Carolina. He's in for life for two murders. But he treats the guards and the staff really well. And as a result, they trust him. And so when there's certain jobs that they want to do, they will come and ask him to do the job because they trust him. And this comes about because he does his jobs well and he's very respectful to the staff. Yeah. And he'll say, hello, and how are you, officer? And, you know, just this kind of thing. And it works wonders. Yeah. Because the prison guards, too, live in an environment where they're not respected. Yeah. It's not an easy job. So, respect and kindness go a long way. Yeah. There's a very good book called Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. He's an attorney in of all states, Alabama. Really, Alabama's it's a difficult state. Wow. Anyway, and he writes about one prison guard. He was going into a prison to interview a client, and the guard was like so hostile towards him. You know, he saw the guard's car out in the parking lot with all these white supremacy stickers and Confederate flag and everything. And Stevenson himself is black, you know. And he came in, and then the guard was so hostile, and, you know, he made him do a strip search and everything. You know, this is for an attorney. So, he was really pretty heavy duty. Then later on, in one case where Stevenson was dealing with one of the clients, this guard had to drive the client to the prison and wait for him. And while he was there, he heard the story of the inmate's life and how he had grown up. And he realized that it was very similar to his own life. When he drove the inmate back, this particular inmate was always asking for a chocolate milkshake. The guard stopped and got him a chocolate milkshake. You know, because he realized, boy, our lives are very similar. Took him back to the prison. Anyway, the next time Stevenson came in to see that particular client, Stephen was working pro bono on these things, the guard was very polite to him and very respectful, no strip search, you know, let him come in, gave him a good client attorney room to speak to the person in, was so polite, yeah. And it just came because, you know, of driving this inmate and then in the court hearing the inmate's story. Yeah. So, you know, on a personal level, so often if we can make that connection on a personal level, it can really do quite wondrous things. Yeah. I often think about this in terms of, you know, the young people who are going off to do jihad, I think many of them for personal reasons, not necessarily for political reasons, or for political reasons that are a reflection of personal difficulties that they've experienced. And if, you know, there were an ability to talk to people and help them feel that they are respected, their religion is respected, and so on, that a lot of this anger, you know, would dissipate. Yeah. But I'm not Pollyanna about it. Okay, so we have to close now. We've gone over time, but good questions.